Welcome. My name is Eden Tosh, and we are listening to ePrasaran Internet Radio. Today, I am talking with Dr. Dilip Gadgil of Pune, India. First, I'll introduce myself a bit. I'm a senior student at Shubham Ayurveda Clinic and School in Fremont, California. I'm a student of Dr. Yash Manor there. And one of our most senior, in fact, our very most senior teacher is Dr. Gadgil, and he is here with us, and we're very lucky to be able to talk to him about Ayurveda and Ayurveda in the United States.
Fine.
Some of the most important issues that we face here.
Yeah, good.
Thanks for coming and talking to us about these issues.
Yeah. Well, it's my pleasure, too, to be here and to have an interview with you.
Good. This should go well then.
Yeah.
Vaidya Gadgil is very senior, very renowned Vaidya in India. He has a PhD in Ayurveda and also graduate work in Sanskrit. But more than that, he's a master of the classical texts that we all adhere to in the practice of classical Ayurveda. He has a very active clinical practice in Pune, India. He also teaches and practices there as well as in the United States here at Shubham Ayurveda in Fremont, California, and in other places across the country and around the world as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the places that you have taught in?
Okay. I'm also working in Bangalore. That is one Institute of Ayurveda and Integrative Medicine.
Uh-huh.
And work there as a consultant once a month for kidney problems and cancer particularly. Mm-hmm. I'm also attached to one Dinanath Mangeshkar Hospital, which is a conventional medicine hospital, and they have Ayurvedic wing. Uh-huh. And I have been visiting many countries, starting from Australia, then European countries like Germany, then France and Italy and Vienna, so many like that. And now, from 2009, I've been visiting California, U.S.
Right.
And that is where I met the Shubham Ayurveda, and I've been teaching over there.
Right. You're the teacher of my teacher.
Yeah.
And
yes,
the teacher of my other teacher.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And the first time you came here to California, into the United States, I think,
yeah,
you came and taught my batch of classmates.
Yeah, 2009.
Right. 4 years ago already, and I believe it was ahar, or diet,
yeah,
recommendations.
Yeah.
Right? That's a specialty of yours. So, in your experiences traveling around the world to all these different places, both teaching and working with clients, what do you notice are the significant differences in the clients that you see here, I mean patients that you see here and in other countries?
Okay. What I would say, because in other countries which I have visited, like European countries and Australia and other things,
mm-hmm,
I've been practicing only the lifestyle consultations and no medication as such. And in India, I'm of course practicing with Ayurvedic medicines, with Panchakarma and everything, full-fledged Ayurvedic treatment.
Right.
So there is a lot of difference between these two. We have so many restrictions when we are just practicing only lifestyle consultation or something.
Mm-hmm.
And as compared to a full-fledged Ayurvedic practice in India.
Right.
Of course, I am getting more complicated cases, advanced cases of cancer, heart disease and diabetes in India. That's my so-called specialty.
Right.
And in other countries, they can vary from cancer to minor ailments like anything. And there is a lot of difference between the culture of India and culture of Western countries. Fortunately enough, I had more ties with yoga people across the globe. And this falls to be the Iyengar yoga tradition. And Simon Marocco in Australia, then Rita Kehler in Germany, and there's so many, all are students of Iyengar. That's the basic issue.
Right. So you're seeing people who are less ill outside of India.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And since yoga people, they are acquainted to Indian philosophy to a certain extent, then it becomes more easier for us to teach them Ayurveda. In fact, I would like to make a bridge to Western countries through yoga and Ayurveda. Ayur yoga, that's a better concept. Mm-hmm. And we can spread Ayurveda through yoga people. That is also one of my tasks that I would like to take up.
Yeah, it seems like there's an increasing interest in Ayurveda here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it's coming from the yoga community.
Yeah.
But then, I know in my own very limited practice that people have a understanding of Ayurveda simply as something that deals with health and diet and not something that can really tackle quite serious problems. Do you see this as a problem or an opportunity?
Yeah, that's even a problem in India as well.
Hmm.
Even though India has a very long background of Ayurveda, everything changed during the British rule. And we are all now born and brought up in the modern educational system. And even all Indian sciences like Ayurveda, yoga, or economics, or politics, or mathematics, and everything, that has been forgotten for generations. That is the issue right now. Fortunately enough, Ayurveda, yoga, philosophy are coming up again. Especially yoga is also coming up.
That's
abundantly
right.
In Western countries, no, even more in more than India or something like that.
Yeah, it's very popular here.
Yeah, it's very popular. And since we have lost the tradition of learning ancient Indian sciences, it has become rather difficult, even for the people to understand it as a scientific system of Indian origin as well. And so the same thing is with foreign countries, as a Western countries, etc. And they don't look at it as an elaborate medical system, scientific system. And it's a very big task to convince them that it's an elaborate system. And the way in which our mindset has been created right now, we need to change that mindset, and unless and until we change it or we become open to other views, it's going to be very difficult for anyone to understand what Ayurveda is, what Indian philosophy is, or something like that.
Right. Do you run into a lot of misconceptions when you come and travel here and teach and work with clients?
Yeah. The major misconception is regarding the scientific nature of Ayurveda. That's the biggest one. What has happened, if we look into the history of conventional medicine, there are various stages as what we see.
Mm-hmm.
The invention of microscope opened up a totally new avenue, so to say, about microorganisms causing the diseases. Cholera was the first one. And then Alexander Fleming, working on penicillin, could find that penicillin works on such microorganisms and is a good remedy for infectious diseases. And this was then extensively used in Second World War. And then that changed the attitude towards infectious diseases totally.
Right.
Then there are advancements in physics like X-rays and scans and PET scans and so many things now. And then there are advantages or advances, especially in anesthesia, so the surgery was much easier as compared to the previous era. And then symptomatic relief in the form of analgesics and steroids, etc., that came up. So all this was used in conventional medicine, and that was successful due to short-term relief, symptomatic relief, and it became popular all over the world. Now that people started considering it as a scientific system, and every other system should be looked through the approach of conventional medicine. That is the scenario right now.
Yeah, I see this quite often with my clients. As long as something superficial or that they see as superficial is happening, a bellyache or a pimple, they come to me. When something they think is serious, like heart palpitation or, I don't know, pneumonia, they won't even think of me because they don't think of Ayurveda as a serious science.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So it is rather difficult for them to understand that this is a complete system, scientific system.
Mm-hmm.
And unless and until we come out from our mindset and at least have open-mindedness to accept something new which has not been learnt or something like that. Then only it might be possible to look at Ayurveda in a different perspective and try to understand it in its true sense.
Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, can Ayurveda manage the kind of serious diseases that Western medicine is typically relied on for?
Yeah, definitely. I have been treating many cases, such cases, acute cases. May it be from cancer, may it be heart disease, may it be diabetes and its complications, and so many other diseases like that. Generally in India, whenever the modern medicine fails to do anything and no way for the patients to come out of the situation, they will start searching the so-called alternatives. Actually, the main and the alternative are deceiving words, and they are interdependent. Because we have something as main in our mind, so in that perspective, something else becomes alternative. But is it true that it is really alternative or not? People don't think like that. But I know that I have treated cases of myocardial infarction, heart attack, with Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Right as it's happening.
In Pune.
Uh-huh.
You see, I am from Maharashtra. It's a city near Mumbai. Mumbai is well known.
Mm-hmm.
Pune is also well known due to Osho.
Mumbai,
and
Bombay.
People still
think of it as Bombay.
Yeah, okay. But I have been handling many complicated cases and acute cases in Pune. And I know that it works. There is no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And those cases which are left by conventional medicine as untreatable, they have to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And since I am a senior practitioner in the field of Ayurveda, I keep on getting cases from my students, I keep on getting cases from my patients, mouth-to-mouth publicity like that.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I don't have any doubt that Ayurveda has a potential to treat even acute and chronic cases, both the cases. Only thing is, what we lack is real understanding of Ayurveda from original texts and clinical experiences. These are the two things. Fortunately enough, our guru, Vaidya Kollatkar, who inspired us to take up studies in Ayurveda, deeper studies in Ayurveda, and particularly from the classical texts, had the vision to foresee what is the future and how should we move. So he inspired us to take up studies of original texts which are in Sanskrit, which are rather difficult to understand, and we have to use the commentaries, Sanskrit commentaries, to understand the text as such. At the same time, we could gather clinical experiences from his practices and the then practitioners of Ayurveda at that time. And this blend of theory and practice worked very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are also doing the same practice today, and we have established one Madhavacharya Gurukul in his name.
Can you explain what that is?
Madhavacharya Gurukul.
Uh-huh.
Madhava is the name of my guru, and Acharya is the teacher. So it's Sri Madhavacharya Gurukul.
Uh-huh. And Gurukul means?
Gurukul is ancient Indian system of learning.
Uh-huh.
Guru is the teacher, and you go and stay with the teacher. So they used to have ashramas, and some serene place, and with mountains and other things like that. And the students living very far away from their homes used to stay with the guru. And it's a full-time learning, right from getting up in the morning till you go to bed. And not only you learn the shastras, that's what they say.
Mm-hmm. The shastras, the text.
Shastras, the science of the text or something like that. But overall you learn about how to live civilized life and other things, etc., etc. So you have discipline, you have obedience, you have respect for the guru and elderly people, etc. All these things you learn in that Gurukul. The same practices we are now trying to introduce in this modern era. So we arrange residential Gurukuls for first BAMS. BAMS is the graduation course for Ayurveda, Bachelor of Ayurvedic Medicine and Surgery.
In India.
Yeah, in India. Yeah. First year, second year and third year. And we teach them original text. And we ask them to memorize the text. We ask them to read the commentaries so that they become acquainted with the original text.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so important to pay attention to these original texts?
Okay. Actually, Ayurveda has come from gods to sages. That is what the texts say. All the sages, they gathered at the Himalayas, the great mountain in India, northern India. And they were worried about the sufferings of the people due to various diseases. And then, with the compassion, they gathered together just to see whether there is any way out and how can they help the people. So the basis of Ayurveda is the compassion for the sufferers. And then they tried to learn Ayurveda from Indra, the king of gods. And this knowledge was transferred from Brahma to Ashwini Kumar, Prajapati, and then Ashwini Kumar, and then to Indra. That is what the tradition
says. This is a series of gods that taught one another.
And then what the sages, the kind of knowledge the sages have is quite different to the kind of knowledge the common human being will have or something like that. They say that there is a yogaja pratyaksha. It's a different kind of practical. And what they understand is a complete or whole knowledge. And this is really a boon for the whole mankind. And it's beauty of Ayurveda, the principles are unchanging and they will remain unchanged for any kind of years or any span of years or something like
that. So even now, these principles are the same?
Yeah, yeah. So what we generally see, Tridosha Siddhanta is what we call, the principle of Tridosha, is the basis of Ayurveda. They say that the body is made up of so many factors, dosha, which... This is a technical term, and it would mean that one which gets vitiated and one which is capable of vitiating others, that is called as dosha.
Mm-hmm. So one that causes trouble.
Yeah, that causes trouble. Okay, but when they are in harmony, they maintain health. It is the principle. So they try to elaborate things about doshas, what are their sites, what are their properties, what are their actions, and how they act synergistically to maintain health, and how they can get vitiated due to various causative factors associated with our diet, associated with our lifestyle, associated with our psychological aspects or something like that.
The weather.
Yeah, weather also. And then how they produce diseases. One will wonder that there are varieties of diseases, okay, right from fever to diarrhea, TB, cancer, AIDS, whatever it may be. How can there be a common platform for such varieties of diseases? But generally, I give example of the music as such. Music has seven notes, okay? Sa re ga ma pa dha ni sa. And whether it is Indian classical music, whether it is light music, whether it is pop music, whether it is from drama, whatever it may be, or any form of music, ancient music, this... time music or one which will come later or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The base of seven node will not change. So it's the permutation and combination of these seven nodes. In the same manner, whatever form the disease may take, since it is just the permutation and combination of these doshas, the base is not going to change. That's right. The beauty of Ayurveda.
Right.
And so, we don't have any time limit as such. That this is good enough for this time period, thereafter it will be something different. It's not like that.
So the texts are timeless.
Yeah, the texts are timeless. And that is why I emphasize that we should go to the original texts, learn them thoroughly. Of course, we call it as, we need tenacity, it's a tapascharya is what we call in Sanskrit.
What was that?
Okay. Working hard with devotion in a particular direction. And generally a tapa is a period of 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And you may have to spend many tapas, so multiplied by 2, 3, 4, whatever it may be, or something like that.
That's how long it takes to learn Ayurveda.
Yeah. And not even that is sufficient. Even may have...
You make it sound hopeless.
You may have more and more births for that. That
Thank
is
God.
Also possible. But anyway, what happens, unless and until you get deep into it, you really don't understand. Say, it's like music. A real musician keeps on learning and learning and understanding. And then he can understand very minute changes that are taking place. In the same manner, a real Vaidya, a real Ayurvedic physician, can go at a very subtle level, observing very, very minute changes. And then he would understand, this vata is not acting properly in this particular way or something like that. And we need to give this to treat that vata or something. So it's a long-standing process anyway. And, it works when you really get into it. And, that's what we need to do. Understand the classical texts and keep them practicing.
Did you have the benefit of studying in this way when you were young?
Yeah, definitely. Fortunately enough, it's a strange story, in a way.
Please tell it.
Yeah. I completed my inter-science in a normal way, what the modern students do. My marks were a little less for qualifying me for MBBS course, which is conventional medicine course.
Which is what you wanted.
Yeah, I wanted. My parents wanted.
Parents wanted, of course.
And as an alternative, because my parents wanted me to become a doctor, and I felt, if not MBBS, I will complete BAMS. So, Bachelor of Ayurvedic Medicine in Sydney. I was not knowing anything about Ayurveda.
There were no Vaidyas in your family?
No.
You had never been to one?
No.
Wow.
There was nobody in the family who was knowing about Ayurveda or something. And initially I got very much frustrated on admission because there was no real teaching and learning. Fortunately enough, one of my friends took me to Vaidya Kolhatkar, and he had a talk with me for one and a half hour, and that changed my life totally.
Amazing.
So I was really moved, and I decided to dedicate my life to Ayurveda. And that was the real turning point. And then I dedicated my whole life for Ayurveda. And Vaidya Kolhatkar suggested a way that I should take up studies in Sanskrit as well, besides doing a BAMS course. I was fond of Sanskrit as well. So I decided to go with Sanskrit grammar for MA in Sanskrit. I completed my course. I started reading original texts along with commentaries and other things under his guidance. And then I had a big opportunity to work on Triskanda Kosh project, which was initiated by Vaidya Kolhatkar. It's a compilation of all references from major texts of Ayurveda, Charaka Samhita, Sushruta Samhita, Ashtanga Sangraha and Ashtanga Hrudayam. And we created three databases. One is Hetu Kosha, that is cause-effect relationship.
A list of all the different causative factors that and
causes,
what they can possibly lead to.
Causative factors and the effects of that in the form of disease or health. As arogya and roga.
Oh, both are there.
Both. You will see all kinds of causes, dietary factors, psychological factors, or whatever it may be, time factor, whatever it may be. That's a huge work, 85,000 records in three volumes. We have printed it in three volumes. This is all in Sanskrit, that is
the
only great difficulty about that. Second is the Lakshana Kosha, the signs and symptoms and diseases or health. So that is very beneficial for having differential diagnosis. Say, given particular condition, we may have different kinds of diagnosis. And there are diseases which are much similar to each other or something like that. I can just quote one example from myself. A case was reported to me having a high-grade fever for 2 months. It was ranging from 101 to 104, 105 every day, Fahrenheit every day. And then the lady developed blisters all over the body, on face, on chest, on mouth, eyes, or something like that.
Was she under Ayurvedic care already?
No, she was in conventional medicine care. Then when the blisters appeared, they diagnosed it as William Johnson syndrome. That's an autoimmune disorder, according to conventional medicine. So they started with steroids. That's the so-called remedy for that. She didn't respond. And a stage came that she was about to die. So the fever was high like that. The blisters were there. She had a lot of pain and other things. So they started searching for alternatives in Ayurveda. And somehow I was contacted. I diagnosed her as Pittaja Visarpa. This is a kind of disease called as Visarpa, and then Pittaja is the variety. Started with some medication, and she responded, and she was saved. Her life was saved, that was the first thing. Mm-hmm. And gradually the symptoms came down, and she got totally relieved. So she got cured from the disease. Huh. Now, I had other options, even like Sandipata Jajwara Vispotaka, that is another diagnosis that I could have in my mind.
Illness. Yeah.
But somehow I arrived at the conclusion that it is Pittaja Visarpa and started with the treatment given for that particular disease. Later on, we developed diagnostic software based on this Hetu Kosha and Lakshana Kosha. And as a trial, I put this case into the software. Surprisingly, to my happiness, the first diagnosis that came up was Pittaja Visarpa.
Uh-huh.
So I am so happy that my software is working very nice. So like that, we have to diagnose a case in Ayurvedic perspective. And it's very elaborate. It's very deep going. And it's very complicated system as such to diagnose in Ayurvedic perspective. But once you have a perfect diagnosis, the things are clear. And you can come out with unbelievable success. Because generally we get cases which have been left by modern medicine. Okay, that is true. But even in such cases where the patient is going to die, and we come up with some success like that. Mm-hmm. Another story I would like to tell, this is regarding cancer. The age of the patient was 67. He was suffering from jaundice. They did ultrasound sonography and they found that there is an obstruction. So they wanted to operate. So opened up. On opening, they found that it's overgrown cancer spreading from gallbladder into the liver and intestines. It was adherent and not separable at all. So they decided to close the abdomen, do nothing, and just advise the relatives that it's a gone case, won't survive more than 15 days, take him home. Fortunately, the surgeon advised to seek Ayurvedic guidance if possible and try. So they started searching, and somehow through one of my students who was their relative, they approached me. I also took advice from Vaidya Kolhatkar, and it went fine. We started with only milk diet
and that was milk diet?
Only milk diet. Mm-hmm. That means no other food, no fruits, mm-hmm. no grains, nothing. Only milk. Whenever the person feels hungry, he has to drink milk.
That's soy milk?
No. When I say milk, it's cow milk.
Yes.
And we emphasize now on desi cow milk. That is also another issue. We don't go for this hybridized cow. We mm-hmm. want to emphasize on desi cow milk.
Right. Here we would maybe have a Jersey cow. It's an older kind of cow.
Yeah. But Brazil has maintained Indian desi cows, gir cows.
Brazil?
Yeah, Brazil.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And they give good quantity of milk. Besides having good quality, the quantity is also good. But anyway, this is some deviation. But what happened, the patient is still alive after 28 years.
Amazing. He's not still having only milk.
No. He initially, for 5 years, he was consuming 1.5 liters of milk every day.
Only.
And then he started with other food as well.
Gradually phased in other food. And it wasn't, I assume there were medicines, herbs and things also involved.
Yeah.
Treatments? There were some treatments involved as well?
Yeah. Ayurvedic medicines were given for him. Mm-hmm. And after 5 years, there was not much medication. some rasayana like chyavanprash and milk and some medicines. Mm-hmm. And thereafter he left the treatment. But he's still alive and with his, he's 95 now, more
That's
than
amazing.
95 years, and it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was telling about the diagnostic software that we created, and Aushadha Kosha, the last one is the kosha of treatments, all sorts of treatments. So there are 3 lakh entries, 300,000
mm-hmm.
Entries. And we developed Ayutha Upachar, the treatment software, based on that. This project was initiated by Vaidya Kolhatkar. Unfortunately, he had a sudden death in an accident in 1992. And the whole responsibility of the project was shouldered over to me. And we required 19 years to complete the project. So we started in 1989. And the project was complete by 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this was a very good opportunity for me to blend my knowledge of Ayurveda and Sanskrit together along with IT in this Triskandha Kosha project.
Right.
And a lot of learning could happen from that.
And that's how come you can recite all kinds of quotes from texts.
Yeah, because I was fortunate enough to read all texts. Basic text again and again, and not only reading but it's understanding of the text and entering it into the computers with a particular viewpoint. And Sanskrit is a very complex language with sandhis and samasas. All words are put together, joined together, so you have to separate each word and then enter it into the computers or something like that. But anyway, I was very fortunate enough to be associated with such a kind of deep scientific work that has benefited me like anything. That's the thing.
Right. So this perspective on Ayurveda that emphasizes the ancient texts and emphasizes really a deep knowledge of the ancient texts is quite different from what most Westerners' perspective on Ayurveda is.
Yeah.
And here you are in the United States and traveling in Western countries and teaching and talking to people in these places, and they don't have that kind of perspective. And they don't have, in most instances, a very skilled vaidya that they can go to and talk to and gain guidance from.
Mm-hmm.
What do you recommend for the rest of us?
Okay, this is rather difficult to say. The most important problem in this is understanding original text. When I say understanding original text, I refer to the original text like Charaka Sushruta Vagbhata or something like that, which is in Sanskrit and in Devanagari. Of course, there are no Roman scripts available.
Mm-hmm. That would be transcription into it.
Yeah, transcription. Yeah. So but to truly understand the text, you need to have deep knowledge of Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big barrier, so to say, right now.
Mm-hmm.
What generally people try to do, they rely on secondary or tertiary sources. That is the thing. Now, there are some translations available of these original texts, which are more technical. And unless and until you have a good teacher, don't understand the essence of that. That is one thing. Secondly, people extract some part of that and write some texts.
Mm-hmm.
Say it might be some text about constitution. It might be some text about lifestyle, some text about food, like that. And they try to gather references from secondary sources, from the translations or something like that, not going to the original one. And if you are not conversant with the Sanskrit and other things, and if the translations are not honest enough, then the base itself is uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
And when that collapses, everything collapses. So the best thing is to do is understand Sanskrit and understand original texts. Of course, that also is not sufficient. You have to understand the philosophies behind that as well. Naya, Sankhya, Vedanta, etc. The philosophical background of Ayurveda that you need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that is even more difficult to understand because they have their own way. To have a grasp of all those philosophies and then put them into Ayurveda and understand Ayurveda in its true sense, it's a Herculean job. But still then, there can be a good way out. I have done the same thing in my books, Lifestyle, the Key to Health, and Cancer, Heart Disease, Diabetes, Prevention and Treatment in Ayurvedic Perspective. These are my two books in English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, without giving any citation from the original text, but taking the essence, I have tried to elaborate on these two subjects. If you really rely on original text, then you get real essence. But if you are relying on secondary sources or tertiary sources, then it becomes difficult, and you may have wrong interpretations by yourself, your understanding, and then you keep on spreading them, multiplying right. them.
Because you've learned the wrong thing in the
yeah.
first place.
The base itself yeah. is wrong, then you can multiply the wrong things or yeah. something like that. And that's what is happening regarding Ayurveda as well.
Right.
So the quality of Ayurvedic education will improve only when we rely on original source. There has to be hard work for that.
Mm.
There is no shortcut for
mm-hmm.
that. What I would suggest is to have a good guru, good teacher, who is well conversant with original texts. Fortunately enough, the team that we have at Shubham Ayurveda
mm-hmm. here in Fremont
is Fremont and is well versed with the original text, and they know the original text. They have learned it, learned the original text.
Right.
If they quote the text and give you meaning, and it's more likely that you get proper teaching.
It's a better step. It's a better step towards the truth.
Yeah. But this is a big problem. Even in India, we have various regional languages like Marathi, Kannada, Gujarati, Punjabi, Uriya, like that.
Mm.
And the same thing has happened. Somebody writes something from the original text for a curriculum or syllabus for a particular subject. Might it be Nidana, might it be Chikitsa, diagnosis or treatment or
mm-hmm.
Dravya Guna, something like that. And if the person is not proper, if the translations are not authentic, then they can create a chaos.
Right.
That is why we emphasized on creating new generation Vaidyas who have a firm base of Ayurvedic texts. When they become teachers, when they start writing books, when they start teaching, the whole situation will change.
Right.
And this will take 25, 50 years or so.
So long to wait.
Yeah, so long to wait. But anyway, that's the way out.
Uh-huh.
So we are heading for that. And my perspective is, okay, we can continue in this direction. This is a proper direction. And over a period, we'll have very good Vaidyas, having a good practicing ability, having good or sound theoretical base, and then having good teaching ability and good research work, whatever mm-hmm. we want to do, that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way out. Mm-hmm. For India and for other countries as well.
Right. And in the meantime, however, we're confronted with so many misunderstandings of what Ayurveda is. I'm sure in India, but here I see it every day. It's quite a challenge to contend with. What sort of misunderstandings do you see as being particularly challenging to the practice of a classical Ayurveda?
The first thing that I said is scientific nature of Ayurveda. This is the major misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
People feel that it's a kind of system wherein you have some symptoms and various or some diseases and some very good medicines. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are suffering from hyperacidity and you get some medicine like Kamduga or whatever it may be or something like that, or Pravadavasam or something. And okay, that relieves the heartburn or something, vomiting, etc. Truly speaking, this is an elaborate system which requires diagnosis, requires particular treatment and etc. So it is not just that some disease, some symptom and some treatment. It's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to understand that there is a diagnosis, there is some cause-effect relationship, there are stages of diseases, there are stages which are incurable or something like that. And then what is achievable target in such cases when the cases are incurable? Say I am treating many cases of cancer at very advanced stage. And there we are confined only to better quality of life and prolongation because cure is not possible at all. But at least we can redefine what is possible, what is achievable target in that. And even at that stage, when there is a lot of pain and other things, we can see what is possible. I would just put one example.
Please.
This is a rather strange example. A patient from rectal cancer who had undergone colostomy operation. So they keep a bag outside for the defecation. She was having a lot of pain and she was brought to me at Ahmedabad. I was visiting Ahmedabad, another distant city. And she was coming from Godhra, away from 150 kilometers away from Ahmedabad. So there was a lot of agony and pain when she was brought first time. I advised her to have only milk diet and gave her some medications. She had very good relief. And this continued well for 1 year. Then, unfortunately, her son and daughter-in-law met with an accident. They were taken to hospital. And she could just hear the news that they met with an accident and have been taken to hospital. She went into shock with this news. She was at the age of 60. And the symptoms aggravated like anything. Fortunately, the son and daughter-in-law were admitted for 15 days. They recovered well and came back. But she was in worse condition by that time.
Wow, so a psychological effect.
Psychological effect. And then I tried my level best to restore her again, but she couldn't be restored. I tried for 2-3 months. Then I said, okay, I have been working and I have been trying my level best, but she is not responding. So maybe you can contact your original surgeon who has done the operation and try to seek some help from him. If that helps him, that helps her, that should be fine. Sometimes they give some morphine patch and that relieves pain. And I have seen that it works in some cases. Her son laughed. So I was astonished. He said, we have already done this before we came to you. That didn't work. That's why we came to you. And it went fine for 1 year with your medication. She had no pain in spite of no relief from this morphine patch. And when you are saying that you are unable to help her, we won't go anywhere. We'll trust only you. And as long as you keep on giving medicine, we'll keep on that. So they didn't move away from me.
Wow.
She lived for another 2-3 months and then she died. But what I wanted to emphasize that this is elaborate system. We have various stages of diseases and there can be incurable stages. We have to redefine our objectives, what is possible in that particular stage or something like that. So the most important misbelief about Ayurveda or misconception about Ayurveda is the scientific nature of Ayurveda. Then there are others, like Ayurveda works very slowly, that is another issue. We may not have something for acute conditions, that is what people think of. This is really not true. See, I have been practicing Ayurveda for last 32 years. When I got admitted to Ayurvedic course and when I dedicated my life to Ayurveda, since then I haven't used conventional medicine for myself or my family members and other things. It's not that I had never become ill. Even in all sorts of acute conditions, this works fine. There is no doubt about that. Only thing is we get patients at a very late stage and the period for treatment may vary from few weeks to months or years or something like that. If you have a suffering for say 10-12 years and you come to us and you require medication for some years, then that's natural because the accumulation is for a prolonged period. But people say, oh, I have been taking medicines for 1 year, 2 years or something like this. It's very slowly acting or something like that. Truly speaking, unless and until there is some result, nobody will continue with the medication in spite if it is available and free. Nobody will spend money for that. So it's not that it's slow working. It works in acute conditions as well. But people have a notion that it works slowly, which is not true, really speaking. Then there is another misconception, and that is about the dietary restrictions that Ayurveda puts on. What has happened in conventional medicine, due to the development of the symptomatic relief, the concept of finding out the reasons, the causes of the disease, has been totally put aside.
Yeah. It's quite ignored in most of Western medicine.
Yeah. If you look into the textbooks of medicine, conventional medicine,
uh-huh.
You will find that the etiology is unknown or idiopathic.
So the causes are often unknown.
But still there is treatment available. This is funny. Because when you have not understood how the disease has occurred, how it has progressed, how come you start with treatment when you have not understood? What Ayurveda says, okay, one has to look into the causative factors. And unless and until we stop the causative factors, how come we'll be able to stop the effect?
Right. It's like effect. Bailing a boat that has a hole in the bottom of it.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to have effect, you need to stop the causative factor. I can quote one example, very simple example. Supposing you are driving a car and you want to stop, what do you do?
Uh-huh.
What do you do?
Take your foot off the gas.
Foot off the?
First, off the gas, off the accelerator.
Accelerator. Uh-huh. And then apply brakes.
Sure.
Or you switch over to lower gear. Of course, you have now...
in automatic
America,
transmission.
You don't have changing gears.
Right.
In India, we have to change gear, lower gear. And then further, we apply brakes. So unless and until you take your foot off the accelerator, the car won't stop. So unless and until you keep the accelerating factors or keep the generating factors, not only accelerating factors, but also generating factors away, how come the disease will go? How come the disease will start progressing?
Right. You can cover it up.
Yeah. The same thing happens with allergic diseases as such. Conventional medicine approach and Ayurvedic approach are much different in allergic conditions.
Like allergies to food or allergies to pollen in the air or something like that.
Yeah. So there are so many. Rhinitis, sinusitis, bronchitis and dermatitis and so many things which are due to allergy, that's what they say. Now what happens when we label this, that this is some allergy, our whole concentration is on that allergen or the things to which we are allergic. It might be pollen grain, it might be dust, it might be paint, or whatever it may be. Or something.
Wheat or milk?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Any food material, anything like that. We say that there are two kinds of causative factors. One is utpadaka, that is generating, and another is vyanjaka, that is expressing. Herein we say that the generating factor, utpadaka hetu, is different than the expressing factor. The allergics, which might be pollen grains or something, these are just expressing factors. Because there is something inside accumulated which can get expressed, so the expressing factor acts and produces disease or produces a condition.
So there's something unseen that's being triggered.
But unless and until there is something accumulated which needs expression, how come the person will have allergy? And the causes for this generation, utpadaka hetu, might be different. It might be ice water. Here in US, I have seen that many people are fond of drinking ice water. Okay?
Ice everything.
Yeah.
Ice coffee, ice tea.
Yeah, everything. And they put lot of ice cubes.
Right.
When I was traveling, they keep on pouring ice cubes like that. Well, this is a cause for accumulation of kapha dosha in the body. And this may not be identified as a cause for bronchitis, sinusitis or something like that, rhinitis. And what people will understand, I came in contact with pollen grains and then I had lot of sneezing and I had bronchial asthma or something like that. I'm allergic to that. I should avoid that.
Right.
But what about avoiding ice cubes? And right. What about ice creams and so many other cheese and other things? Which are a causative factor, which are precipitating factors, as such, for accumulation of doshas. So we neglect the causative factor, real causative factor. And we just emphasize on what is the expressing factor or something like that. And moreover, there are anti-allergic drugs. So even we may not neglect that, we'll have anti-allergic.
And what do those drugs do?
They symptomatically fix the problem.
Right.
They don't address the problem. I quote yet another example. This is very strange and very good. A patient was reported to me suffering from allergic urticaria. You know allergic urticaria?
I don't know what that means.
Okay. You get rashes on the skin, like red and
high. I have like itchy bumps.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And he was suffering from this for last 5 years. And every day he has to take anti-allergic in the Avil. That was the drug. When I took the history, I found that he was suffering from hyperacidity previously. And he was eating a lot of spices, non-vegetarian diet, and late night dinners, and so many factors, and curds, and so many things. And for that he was having antacids. Because he was having heartburn, vomiting, headache, vomiting like that. So he used to have antacids for that. After some years, these symptoms precipitated. He didn't have more vomiting or something like that. So he stopped the medicines. The consumption of causative factors continued. And after 5-6 months, he developed this allergic urticaria. So he was now on anti-allergic drugs. And he was taking them every day for 5 years. So when I noticed that the causative factors have continued like this, and only the track had changed, it was the alimentary canal initially, and now it's skin eruption. So I gave him some medication, and again he had symptoms of hyperacidity. The doshas returned to their original site. I went into Vaman and Virechana and got rid of them.
Those are
advised him
treatments.
Totally about the diet and other things. And he got relieved from both hyperacidity and urticaria.
So in this case, the antihistamines or the anti-allergic drugs and the antacids were actually complicit in creating the disease.
Yeah, they were not really treating the disease. They were just giving an impression that the patient is symptomatically getting relieved. But the accumulation of doshas keep on going continuously. And then this outburst in any form, like allergy or anything else. And even then, if you start with anti-allergics, there is no scope at all. So ultimately, the people have to turn towards Ayurveda or some alternatives like that, which goes into the root cause, understand it thoroughly, and then come out with proper solutions with dietary restrictions and other things. So whenever we call something as a scientific system, there has to be a cause-effect relationship. Unfortunately, the conventional medicine has gone away from the scientific nature itself.
They don't see it that way.
Yeah. They are seeing it in a superficial way, at different level.
Or they're seeing a virus as the causative factor, as opposed to the conditions in the body as the causative factor.
Yeah. What has happened? Initially, we had even Hippocrates and these people have holistic approach. With these various kinds of inventions, there was a reductionist view, focusing on particular things and neglecting other things. And that has led to such a situation right now. We can just have one example from antibiotics and infection, something like that. When Louis Pasteur said that this water is contaminated with bacteria causing cholera, someone from the mob said, no, how it can be? So he drank the water and he didn't have any effect. He didn't get cholera. So even this Pasteur was confused. But he was firm that it contained those bacteria. Later on it was known that, he had good immunity. And that's why the bacteria couldn't do anything in his body. And he didn't suffer from cholera. Now this is known well back 200 years before or something like that. But still today, the whole focus of conventional medicine is finding out newer and newer, more stronger antibiotics and neglecting the immunity aspect totally.
Right.
This is a unidirectional growth or something like that. And the same thing is happening with cancer. The same thing is happening with AIDS or something like that. We have totally neglected the aspect of immunity as such. And that would come when you have holistic approach. Because that immunity is dependent on what you eat, on what exercise you do, or something like that. It's the strength of the body. And if you neglect that aspect totally and just keep on moving in another direction or something like that, that forms a reductionist approach, a focused approach, getting away from holistic approach. And that has created the biggest damage. So what we emphasize right now is Ayurveda is a Veda of Ayush. Veda is knowledge. It's derived from the root Veda. And Veda has three meanings. One meaning is existence, something in which Ayush exists. Second is to gain, so something through which we gain Ayush. And the third meaning is to know, understand. Mm-hmm. So something through which we understand Ayush. And Ayush, according to Ayurveda, is not just life, because life has its own meaning, and the word Ayush has a different meaning from the life, from the word life. So it's a union of the body, the mind, the senses and the soul, four factors put together. So when we have a very large perspective, when we see biology in modern system or something like that, that is far different from the concept of Ayush in Ayurveda. Though it is said to be life science or something like that, the concept of life differs. There is a large difference, lot of difference between the concept of life in modern sciences and concept of life in Ayurvedic perspective or in ancient Indian perspective as such. Mm-hmm. And so there has been a lot of deviation from understanding the core, what we need to understand about our life as such. And modern medicine or conventional medicine has focused a lot through modern physics, chemistry, biochemistry like that, on the body, its minute structure, physiology and other things, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. But it has failed to know about the psychological aspects, about the role of soul, mm-hmm. which is very, very different. Mm-hmm. And unless and until you consider body as a living thing, this whole approach is totally mechanical approach.
Right, a living thing as opposed to a machine.
Yeah, machine, yeah. Yeah. There is one book by Alexis Carrel, Man the Unknown, which won the Nobel Prize. And this has been published 60 years before. It's available on net, free download. He says that the conventional medicine would never be able to approach the human being because the approach is inadequate. We are trying to know something about a living being and we are not considering the factors associated with living.
That seems like a big oversight.
Yeah, we are just emphasizing more and more on mechanical things, mm-hmm. and not neglecting really the Chaitanya is what we call, the liveliness of that. Mm-hmm. So the Ayurvedic approach is totally different. And from where we started, I got lost.
I'm sure no one will mind. It's a good story.
Okay. So we were talking about approach of Ayurveda, holistic approach and reductionist mm-hmm. approach and other mm-hmm. things, etc. Scientific nature that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So the base, whole base of Ayurveda or ancient Indian medical sciences is different. I was talking about the infection. Mm-hmm. Kautilya, a very good economist, in the ancient Indian economist, he says that if the war is inevitable, then it should be on the enemy's land and not on your land. Why? Because no doubt anybody may succeed, but the land on which the war occurs, it gets destructed. Mm-hmm. It suffers. So it should be enemy's land that should suffer, not our land or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now what has happened with this theory about the antibiotics and germs or something like that, our body becomes the land for battle. Mm. And when we ourselves fight, then we try to take care of our body. But if it is some American troop and Afghanistan troop or something like that fighting somewhere in else or some Iran or something like that, What's going to happen?
Right.
Who is going to care for the land? Nobody is going to care. Neither the antibiotics nor the germs are going to care for the land.
Right. Uh-huh.
And that's how we have made damage to ourselves with this theory. We should have emphasized on immunity more. And only very few cases should be subject of matter for antibiotics.
Right.
That should have been the principle for treating infectious diseases. Yeah. or what the there is a major difference between the developed countries and underdeveloped countries or developing countries. In developed countries, they emphasize more on hygiene, okay, good quality of food, hygienic food, water, etc., etc. So there is not enough scopes for the microorganisms to grow. What about India? What about Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and other places or something like that? We have ample scope for the microorganisms to grow. And when they produce a disease, we go with antibiotics or something like that. Fortunately, Indians are much, much stronger.
Well, even Western
medicine. They have developed immunity to a lot of infections.
Yeah.
So they don't fall prey to all those infections or something like that.
Yeah, even allopathic research has recently said children who grow up in homes where there's antibacterial spray and everything's very clean all the time, they're sick as adults.
Yeah, that's true. So more emphasis should have been given on immunity aspect rather than the antibiotic theory or something like that.
Because in the long run, the organism, the human body, is stronger when it has to fight its own battles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that is how the holistic approach and the reductionist approach, they differ from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that has created a problem. And so people feel that there is no need of any dietary restrictions or something like that. I can eat anything. Even if you ask a doctor, what dietary restrictions should I follow? He will laugh and say, we can eat anything. How can it be like that? Ultimately, we are what we eat, because nothing is coming something from outside. Whatever we are putting in the form of food or water, whatever it may be, that is going to get converted into body parts, body organs or body tissues. So we have to be very, very cautious about putting something into our body. And unfortunately, conventional medicine fails to understand that in true sense or something like that. They have, of course, certain concepts. I don't say they don't have anything or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not sufficient.
Yeah. It's certainly underdeveloped compared to the energy that's put into researching drugs and doing surgeries and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. More focus on those aspects.
Yeah.
And, it's a control of the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance companies and the hospital management groups.
Yeah.
They have the full control over the medical system as such. And truly speaking, maintaining health is a personal responsibility. And we should emphasize on training the individuals for personal health.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to community, we can keep on guiding the community about what to do, what not to do, or something like that. And only when a problem arises, we may try to find the cause first. What is the cause for this problem? Identify cause, remove cause, or rectify it, and then if needed, you give some medication. That should be the ideal way.
Sounds nice.
But unfortunately, we are going in a very different way.
We're starting with the sickest people.
That is the thing.
So my guess is this is how you've come to working with lifestyle as a focus of your practice.
Yeah, that's true. After having a practice of around 32 years and treating many kinds of acute as well as chronic cases, I realized that the root cause of all these things is the lifestyle and changes in lifestyle, drastic changes in lifestyle.
Thank you so much, sir, Dr. Guy Gill, for coming and talking to us here. Anybody who might be interested in having further discussions with the doctor can contact Shubham Ayurveda in Fremont. There's a website you can get all the contact information off of.
www.shubhamayurveda.com.
S-H-U-B-H-A-M-A-Y-U-R-V-E-D-A
.com. Yeah. And my email address is Dr. Gadgil, at VSNL, V for Victory. Or there is another, Gadgil, Gadgil, .dilip, D-I-L-I-P, at gmail.com.
Gmail.com.
So that should be easier, more easier.
Yeah.
Your suggestions are most welcome. We look forward for a long-term association.
Yes, we do. Thank you so much.
Yeah.